I always knew I'd love to come to Gordon Brown, and thank you for identifying one more thing to bind us together. It's always a pleasure to be at an Inspiring Governance event because, of course, governance is so important to all our schools. Whatever type of school, whether it's a local authority maintained school, a church school, academy or free school, the key decision driver is the governing body. You could say it's the head, but then the governing body appoint the head. I know many of you here today, as we've already virtually are governors, and we couldn't run our school system without the support of people like you around the country, probably about 300,000 people, providing your services free of charge and the dedication you provide. We must continually thank you and congratulate you and support you, and also seek to recruit more people like you and to continually seek to increase the professionalism of governing bodies and governors, which is what Inspiring Governance and Violence, so ably run by Nick, is all about. There are, of course, many excellent schools in this part of the country, but sadly, I'm sure you all know, that there are still too many poorly performing or coasting schools. Indeed, Ofsted tell us that the proportion of schools in this part of the world, the east of England, which are good and outstanding, is lower than in other parts of the country. Before I got into this line of work, rather surprisingly, late in life, I was a venture capitalist. Some people don't know what a venture capitalist is. Certainly my son didn't, when at the age of 18 was asked what his father did for a living. He replied, I think he's something called an adventure copyist. But when we invest in businesses, we take real care to ensure that the boards that we're, the companies we're investing in, really are correctly constituted, the right balance, the right mix of skills, the chemistry is right, and that there are no passengers. Because even people who don't contribute much can really hijack a debate. And I think we're pretty good at it. But when it goes wrong, when a business goes wrong, it's often because the business has been, the board has been dysfunctional. And when I got into this line of work, I noticed that it's very similar to schools. The characteristic of a failing school is often a poor governing body, and of a coasting school is often rather comfortable and complacent governing body. And we want our governing bodies to be dynamic and highly professional. One of the things I noticed was that one of the common characteristics of governing bodies of failing schools was that the governing body had almost seemed to have been constituted with the effectiveness of the people, and the governing body almost as the last consideration, much more based on representation. And I think we confuse representation and effective governance at our peril. Governors may represent a particular constituency, but they must have the relevant skills. Governance and our schools are far too important to have anything other than that, which is why I've tried so hard to bring effective governance to the top of the agenda over the last 18 months, and to set high expectations, reduce bureaucracy, and improve training and support for governors to help them make their lives more efficient, and to make it easier for schools to attract people onto their governing bodies, particularly from the world of work. It's clear that business and professional communities have a huge amount to contribute to schools and school governance, and they also have a lot to gain. And you don't need to have any previous experience of state education. You just need to have the right skills to focus on the three core functions that we've now focused governing bodies on: setting the strategy and vision of the school, holding the head to account for the progression and attainment of pupils, and the performance management of staff and the money. These are skills that people from the business and professional communities in the world of work have in abundance. The ability to set a visionary strategy, a questioning approach, data analysis, financial expertise, and recruitment and motivation. For instance, we brought performance-related pay into school, something which schools really have no experience of, and which is second nature to a lot of people in business. And people from the business professional worlds can bring a lot of contacts to schools. I think this is often underestimated in terms of mentoring, inspirational speakers, work experience, careers advice. And this is, of course, particularly helpful for pupils from workless households. I've seen so often that Governor offers employees superb professional development with the opportunity to build skills that they can then bring back to their day job. It's particularly true for younger governors, who we're especially keen to recruit. They'll have the chance to gain board-level experience at a far earlier age than they would otherwise in their career. And on top of this, there's the reward of having a real impact on schools with the potential to transform the lives of so many children, which is so central to the future of our country. And as sure as many of you here know, there's nothing quite like that. As well as Anglia Water, there are some good examples of other local employers like Cambridge Police, ENSA's accountants, and the British Antarctic Society, who, with the help of ESPOS, are encouraging their staff to become school governors. I'm sure they won't regret it. To quote Matt Sparks, who's Global Head of Corporate Responsibility at the law firm Linklaters, for many of the several dozen who serve as governors, it's a vital window on the world. Governors tend to be among Linklaters' most committed volunteers. Staff typically experience more responsibility, accountability, and recognition in their day job after volunteering as a school governor. And BP's community development manager, Ian Duffy, is also very positive. He says that the company sees school governance as one of the most beneficial volunteering activities for employees, helping them to develop leadership skills that benefit themselves, the school, and our business. And given our surroundings, it's encouraging to see how many universities are embracing school governance and promoting better outcomes in schools. Manchester University, for example, has succeeded over the last year in doubling the number of members of their staff involved in school governance. Working with ESCOS, they're now the fastest growing university in the UK for enlisting staff to become school governors. And we're keen to see many more employers share a similar level of ambition and inspiring staff with relevant skills to come forward and make a difference. But it's not just about getting a bigger supply of high quality governors from business. It's also about sending a message to schools to generate a higher demand for their skills. And thanks to the work that Nick's doing, we have increasingly numbers of governors who are prepared to come forward, and schools need to know that they are there and available, and they need to set higher expectations of their governing bodies. Research by the National Governors Association and Bath University shows there's more to do to achieve this, with many governing bodies not putting enough effort into recruiting high-quality governors. And this is especially true for weaker schools and those in deprived areas, those schools that need good governance the most. This is why we've now changed the law to ensure that governors must be appointed on the basis of their skills. They can no longer be appointed just because of who they are or who they represent. Under these changes, all maintained schools will also now work to the same set of simpler, more flexible 2012 constitution regulations by September next year. It's a transition that provides governing bodies with a valuable opportunity to take stock, to look again at their size, structure, and membership, and the impact that their governing body is having. I urge all governing bodies to take this opportunity, not to see it as a paper shuffling exercise, but really use this as a moment to review and refresh your governing body and fill in any gaps that you have and bluntly get rid of any passengers that you've been dying to get rid of for years. Because it's this focus on skills, on self-evaluation, on striving for continuous improvement that holds the key to better governance. It's good to see that the National Coordinators of Government Services, NCOGS, which represent local authorities, is supporting our approach and our approach to increase training. We've doubled our investment in training through the National College of Teaching and Learning and Leadership, so there's more free and subsidised training. We also continue to fund the free Government Line Advice Service, and we've appointed 300 national leaders of governance to provide chairs with free peer-to-peer support. I'd encourage governors and governing bodies to take full advantage of this support. As Andrew Baxter said,